This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Biden draws fire. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Friday, June 28th. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
On the second debate night for Democratic presidential candidates, former Vice President Joe Biden was pressed by rivals who trail him in the polls.
From Washington, Supreme Court decisions on the citizenship question and gerrymandering, plus congressional approval of aid for the southern border.
In sports, in one of the most anticipated games in recent memory, the U.S. faces France today in the quarterfinals of the Women's World Cup.
And the college major that students regret the most.
More than one in 10 regret their college major. The big thing here, right? If you majored in humanities, which might be English or history, that was the most regretted major by a pretty wide margin. So yeah, we're seeing a theme here. That these humanities, liberal arts majors often end up regretting what they majored in.
Katie Hill at Market Watch on the most regrettable college major in America. She's here in about 20 minutes. The second batch of Democratic presidential candidates gathered in Miami for their first debate last night. The full stage of 10 more contenders discussed the role of government in healthcare and other issues and whether the party should embrace aspects of socialism, a position embraced by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Former Vice President Joe Biden, as the leader in current polling, found himself playing a lot of defense. California Senator Kamala Harris, who was black, told Mr. Biden it was hurtful to hear him warmly recall working with two deceased segregationist senators.
I did not praise racists. That is not true, number one. Number two, if we want to have this campaign litigated on who supports civil rights and whether I did or not, I'm happy to do that.
Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, discussed gun control.
And as somebody who trained on weapons of war, I can tell you that there are weapons that have absolutely no place in American cities or neighborhoods in peacetime.
When the candidates were asked if their health care plans would cover illegal immigrants, all 10 raised their hands. When the Democratic National Committee randomized debate stage lineups, they did so hoping to avoid one night featuring high-profile candidates and another of those looking to join the top tier. With so many candidates getting their first chance at the spotlight the past two nights on stage in Miami, airtime became precious currency for the likes of New Jersey Senator Cory Booker.
Healthcare is not just a human right, it should be an American right, and I believe the best way to get there is Medicare for all.
More on the spotlight fight from Chelsea Janes, reporter at the Washington Post. Chelsea, what do we have here?
You know, despite the DNC's efforts to sort of keep these two nights even in terms of, you know, the profile of the people involved, you ended up with, you know, a group of people that were by and large polling lower on the first night, which meant that a lot of those people were, A, trying to introduce themselves, to voters really for the first time, and B, just sort of desperate for whatever time they could get. So, you know, we saw, you know, Mayor de Blasio talking over people, Congressman Delaney, and then it sort of went from there. But it was a night where a lot of people were desperate to get some airtime and had to get a little bit creative in terms of how they were going to get it.
You wrote that some candidates' messages were highlighted by their antics and some were obscured. What were some examples of both?
You know, I think while Mayor de Blasio's campaign has not been received particularly kindly by the New York media and others, he was sort of effective in at least conveying the message that he believes that Democrats sort of have to, you know, really lean in on bold ideas and return the party to one that working people can believe in. That's a fairly common refrain among these candidates, but it was one that he sort of seized and made his own and reiterated every time he took, you know, time or was given time, as the case may have been. I think Julian Castro, who didn't so much engage in antics as much as tried to make immigration his issue, you know, as a a former mayor of San Antonio, someone who works intimately on these issues, he really, you know, challenged other people in the field to kind of take the steps that he has on immigration, to decriminalize crossing the border, and even, you know, went so far as to try to pinpoint his fellow Texan, Beto O'Rourke, on that issue. So, you know, there were different ways of doing it, but I do think de Blasio and Castro were two that were able to kind of slice through the noise, albeit in you know, fairly different ways.
Was anyone hurt by that?
You know, I think one person who came off, you know, unsuccessfully was Tim Ryan. He got into sort of a heated exchange with Tulsi Gabbard, in which he basically said that, you know, was arguing that Americans needed to maintain a presence in Afghanistan. Gabbard, a veteran of the Iraq War, you know, said that that was an unacceptable answer. And Ryan defended that stance by saying, you know, when left their own devices over there, they flew planes into our buildings. And Gabbard quickly corrected him that it was not, you know, the Taliban who they've been talking about, but rather Al-Qaeda, who staged 9/11 attacks. And, you know, that sort of left Ryan on his heels a little bit. His campaign later clarified that he, you know, meant that the Taliban were complicit and all this. But in the moment, it certainly was one of those gaffes that kind of sticks out in your mind. And while he's sort of a big presence, you know, big voice, does have a little bit of a unique Midwestern message, I think that it probably got lost there as he tried to engage with Gabbard.
We're speaking with Chelsea Janes, reporter at The Washington Post. She's got a piece entitled "Lesser Known Candidates Claw for the Spotlight in Democratic Debate." What are some of these candidates going to be doing between now and the next debate so people don't forget about them?
That's a great question. I think a lot of them are just going to try to make sure that, you know, they're in a position that the next debate won't be their last. You know, I do think there are some candidates who are going to be on that precipice. You know, de Blasio is still very early in his campaign, but you could see, you know, if things don't pick up drastically from here, that he might be in that position. You know, John Delaney has self-funded his campaign, hasn't made any indications that he would, you know, drop out anytime soon. But again, if you don't meet these requirements for the September debates, these doubled polling requirements and donor requirements, it's going to be really tough to keep getting your message out there, you know, even tougher than it already is. So I think, you know, between now and July and in those July opportunities, some of these candidates that we saw, Eric Swalwell among them, are going to have to sort of continue to try to get that attention and get their donors up and just kind of stay around so that they can get these brief moments of airtime.
Thanks, Chelsea. Chelsea Janes, reporter at The Washington Post. President Trump is promising to try to delay the 2020 census after the Supreme Court blocked, for now, his plan to include a question about citizenship. The court said yesterday that the explanation for adding the question was insufficient and sent it back to the lower courts for further consideration. Fox News says while more lower court litigation is possible, it would be difficult for the government to get the question on the census now in time for the forms to be printed by their original self-declared summer deadline. The High Court also ruled yesterday that federal courts may not intervene to block even the most partisan election maps drawn by state lawmakers, a decision that allows such gerrymandering to continue. Reaction from Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin.
Sending the gerrymandering question back to the states is a guarantee that nothing's going to happen. It's the states that generate these maps that are controversial. It's unlikely that they're going to find themselves at fault.
The 5-4 opinion by Chief Justice John Roberts said partisan election maps drawn by North Carolina Republicans and Maryland Democrats are constitutional despite their one-sided nature. It's 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for joining us and welcome into Friday. The House has passed a $4.6 billion bill approved by the Senate to aid the crisis at the southern border. The measure, which more than 100 House Democrats voted against, now heads to President Trump for his signature. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had pledged to make changes to the Senate version, including tightening restrictions on how the administration could use the funds. But the Wall Street Journal says she instead gave in to pressure from moderates to pass the Senate version ahead of the July 4 recess.
As always with every vote, it is a vote of conscience. The situation at the border is a challenge to the conscience of America.
The legislation will provide relief to immigration agencies stretched thin by the recent surge in people seeking asylum at the southern border, paying for food, shelter, and medical care for the migrants. U.S. officials said cities on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border are overwhelmed by migrants from Central America, many of them families with children. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to Democratic divisions over race, age, and ideology burst into public view in last night's presidential debate, punctuated by a heated exchange between former Vice President Joe Biden and California Senator Kamala Harris. It was one of several moments that left the 76-year-old Biden, who entered the night as his party's early frontrunner, on the defensive.
I was part of the second class to integrate Berkeley, California public schools almost two decades after Brown v. Board of Education.
Because your city council made that decision. It was a local decision.
So that's where the federal government must step in. That's why we have the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act.
Biden called Harris's criticism a complete mischaracterization of his record. He later accused the Trump administration of embracing racism. With a smile and a finger point, President Trump told Russia's Vladimir Putin in Osaka today, "Don't meddle with the election." In their first meeting since the special counsel concluded that Russia extensively interfered with the 2016 campaign. The tone of the president's comments, which came after a reporter asked if he would warn Putin, was immediately open to interpretation, but it would seem to do little to silence questions about Trump's relationship with Russia. The Supreme Court has halted the Trump administration's plans to ask residents on the 2020 census whether they are citizens in a ruling that voiced blunt concerns about the White House's motivations. The court, in a strongly worded opinion by Chief Justice John Roberts, said Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who made the decision to add a citizenship question, hadn't explained his real reasons for doing so, leaving the legality of his actions in question. In a pair of tweets after the ruling, President Trump said he asked lawyers if the census could be delayed for now while legal proceedings continue. Just in time for the July 4th holiday, we've got the world's biggest hot dog. Coney Island establishment Feltman's, the restaurant credited with creating the first hot dog, just earned itself a Guinness World Record for a new innovation, making the world's largest one. It's 5 feet long and 2 feet wide and weighs almost 75 pounds. Pieces of the hot dog will be sold for $10 to raise money for a nonprofit that works to help veterans with mental health issues.
Good cause. Strange imagery there with that size hot dog.
Exactly.
My goodness. That sounds like an actual log.
It's huge. It's ridiculous.
Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. College may come with a side of regret. A new survey finds two-thirds of students said they had a major regret about their educational experience. More from Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. Katie, give us some numbers.
This is a huge survey of 250,000 Americans from PayScale that have their bachelor's degree. More than 1 in 10 regret their college major. The big thing here, right, if you majored in humanities, which might be English or history, that was the most regretted major by a pretty wide margin. That's from PayScale. Another survey showing the same thing. English majors in particular were the most regretted major from another survey. So, yeah, we're seeing a theme here. That's that. These humanities, liberal arts majors often end up regretting what they majored in.
What were some of the reasons that people regret their major? Is it simply that they don't make enough money?
I mean, that's a big one, right? They're low salaries. Often there's higher unemployment and some of those things, and they're low salaries. And so they get out of college, and they have a lot of fun studying English or whatever, but then they can't get a job, or they can get a job, but it's not a well-paying job. And they just feel like, why didn't I do something else? Now, of course, most people who major in humanities, I must point out, they love it. They're glad they majored in it. They don't regret it. But still, more than one in five say they regret some kind of humanities and liberal arts major.
On the flip side, if you're doing a lot of math in your college years, you're probably pretty happy with your major.
That's right. Computer science and engineering majors, they don't have many regrets about their majors. I mean, again, this is probably because there's a lot of jobs for them. They're well-paying jobs, right? And they're in growing fields, so these people are pretty happy with their major. You know, to me, I know this is not a popular opinion, but I think it speaks to the fact that you can't just go into college and say, I'm going to study what I love. You do have to think about it. If you're going to need to work for money later on, you should be factoring that in, especially if student loans are in the mix.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch, and she's written a piece entitled, This is the Most Regrettable College Major in America. Also in the survey, no surprise, student loans topped the list of the biggest regret that people had with their college experience.
Yeah, right in front of college majors. So the number one regret people had was student loans. Some people are taking on far more debt than they can deal with, and then they know they're looking down the line at 30 years of paying this off, and it stresses them out, right? And it makes sense, right? Student loan debt now totals upwards of $1.5 trillion. That's up from $600 billion just about a decade ago. And now the average student who graduates with debt is owing $30,000. Some people owe a lot more. And yeah, if you major in English, you've got all this student loan debt, then you can't get a well-paying job. It's gonna be hard for you.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch in New York. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. We've all been through this at the airport, racing for a flight in full stress mode. Here's a way to decompress. Use Clear. Clear helps you get through security with the tap of your fingers so you can get to your gate faster and relax. Here's the thing. You are your own ID. Leave your driver's license in your wallet. Clear uses your eyes and fingertips to get you through security, and it's a simple sign-up. Create your account online before going to the airport. Once you get there, a Clear ambassador helps you finish the process. Not just airports either. Clear gets you through security faster in 50-plus airports and stadiums, with more being added every day. Also, if you're traveling with family, up to three of them can be added at a discounted rate. And kids under 18 are free when traveling with a Clear member. Clear works with PreCheck, too. And right now, listeners of our show can get their first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/Gordon and use the code Gordon. Zip through airport security with your fingerprints. That's clearme.com/Gordon, code Gordon, for your free 2 months of Clear. clearme.com/Gordon, promo code Gordon.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday, June 28. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Supreme Court allows gerrymandering but says no to the citizenship question on the census. $4.6 billion approved by Congress in emergency aid for the southern border. Today's the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riot. President Trump is in Japan today for the G20 summit. Ford is cutting 12,000 jobs in Europe. U.S. versus France in the quarters of the Women's World Cup, and how World Cup advertisers are embracing causes. That story in about 20 minutes. Ambitious House Democrats have already begun jockeying behind the scenes for leadership spots, anticipating that Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, and Majority Whip James Clyburn could all be gone after this Congress or the next. It's a story by Scott Wong, reporter at The Hill. Scott, what are you hearing?
Well, I think that, you know, politics can often be unpredictable, as we've seen in the last few election cycles. And so Democrats who are ambitious, who are sort of the rising stars in the party, just want to make sure that they are well positioned for whatever shakeup occurs in the next couple election cycles. Nancy Pelosi has said that she will serve no longer than two more terms. She has essentially term limited herself, and so it is inevitable that there will be a turnover in the leadership, especially in the top three positions, with Steny Hoyer and James Clyburn, who are now approaching, if not 80 years old, are approaching 80 years old, and they will have to pass the baton at some point. And so you have people like Hakeem Jeffries and the vice chair, Catherine Clark of Massachusetts, and some other names who are working the inside game right now, raising money for their colleagues, reaching out to some of the minority caucuses that will be very influential in deciding who the next Speaker of the House will be, simply because of their rising numbers and the increasing diversity of the Democratic caucus.
Is it politically dangerous to lobby for jobs held by powerful people now?
You know, I think it is, you know, if you do it in a really overt fashion, and that's, you know, you're always walking the tightrope. But I think that's why we're seeing some of these players approach this in a very discreet way behind the scenes. On the other hand, I think, you know, if you are going to run for Speaker of the House, you have to get your name out there nationally, right? You can't be an anonymous lawmaker. I mean, if you look at all the past speakers, Pelosi and John Boehner, and especially Paul Ryan, who was on the vice presidential ticket of Mitt Romney, these were national names, people who had sort of worked their way through the system and come up through the political system. And you can't really come out of nowhere to be elected Speaker, or in very rare cases, can you do that? And so I think these are people who are trying to build their personal brand, so you don't want to be too overt in doing that because, as you mentioned, you have very powerful folks holding these positions at the moment, and they are reluctant to give up their power, but at some point they will need to step aside, and so these people want to be waiting in the wings.
We're speaking with Scott Wong, reporter at The Hill. He's written a piece entitled "Democrats Already Jockeying for House Leadership Posts." Is this about the time in a presidential election when this type of thing starts?
No, I mean, we're you know, about a year and a half out, and it does seem very early for these conversations to be happening. But I will say that we're right in the midst of the presidential election cycle, which seems to be happening earlier and earlier each year, and so I guess it's only natural that you would see House leadership and perhaps Senate leadership races playing out earlier as well. It just seems like we are in a continual election cycle that, you know, before decades ago, I think once the election happened, that would stop, and then people would turn to legislating. Now it just seems, because of the partisan nature of Washington these days, it really does seem that the election cycle never stops. And so I think it's only natural that you would see these leadership races heating up or beginning to heat up this early out.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Wong, reporter at The Hill. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. And you can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. France and the U.S. will play today in the quarterfinals of the World Cup, with the winner emerging as the clear favorite to win the whole tournament. Both sides won their groups and ground through their round of 16 matchups to set up the heavyweight clash of the tournament in Paris. Here's This Morning's Jennifer Koshenka.
It's the most anticipated match in years, today's women's soccer game between the U.S. and host France at the World Cup. Here with a preview, Joshua Robinson of the Wall Street Journal. Joshua, why does France match up so well with the U.S.?
Well, of all the teams in women's world soccer over the past 4 years, only one of them has beaten the U.S. twice, and that's France. And France, they're no longer afraid of the Americans. Their best result at a World Cup may only be fourth place, but they're on home soil, and they play a game that is really centered around possession, around speed, and those are things that the U.S. is not used to seeing.
The French men have been good for a very long time. The women have not. How have they been able to build up their program?
A lot of it happens, rather than at the international level, at the club level. Central to all of it are the efforts of a club called Olympique Lyonnais, which has an unbelievably strong women's team because they invested in women's soccer very early. So with a budget of around $10 million a year, they're blowing away the competition, and it consolidates a lot of the best talent. So during the opener, for instance, France had seven starters from Olympique Lyonnais, and those players play together. They train at a very high level. They're fully professional, and that really trickles upwards to the national team.
How does that compare to the way the U.S. has built up its women's program?
The U.S. model is still very much you go to college, and then eventually you get drafted, and then you play in the North American Professional League, which is called the NWSL. And all 23 of the U.S. players at this World Cup play in the NWSL. Now, that is a high standard, and it's fully professional, but The difference is that used to be the gold standard for everybody. Now the European leagues are closing that gap in professionalism, in physicality, because they're fully professional. They train every day now. And that's the first thing that all the European clubs notice when they go pro, is that the fitness and the strength improves immediately. So that gap is closing, and France is leading the pack.
We're speaking with Joshua Robinson of the Wall Street Journal about today's match between the U.S. and host France. Now, you mentioned that France beat the U.S. recently. Does that give them an edge knowing they can do it, or does the U.S. have an edge of some revenge?
The game that France beat the U.S. recently in was back in January in Le Havre on a frigid night. And that was against a U.S. team that wasn't quite at its best. So the U.S. will write that one off, but France doesn't. They know they can do it on any given day. And they're not afraid of the U.S. anymore. And one thing that the France captain, Wendy Renard, told me was that she remembers a great compliment that Abby Wambach, the U.S. striker, gave her once. And she said, "We hate playing France." And as Wendy Renard said, that stays in your mind.
Joshua, the U.S. team is very deep, but how healthy are they?
Well, there are some questions around the health of Alex Morgan, the star striker, and she was not moving well against Spain. She claims she's 100% fit, and she should expect to start, but it's going to be interesting if she's less than 100% and far too easy for France to contain, really. I mean, the U.S. is going to need all of its weapons here.
Coach Jill Ellis was roundly criticized for not subbing much in that game. Do you think she will change tactics in this one?
I think it depends on how the game will go. If the U.S. are trailing late in the game, I think she'll go to the bench much sooner than she did against Spain. But it's really going to be a game for in-game decisions, and there'll be a lot of pressure on this. And Jill Ellis is not necessarily reputed for making the best in-game decisions. I think the woman who's on the other bench, Corinne Diacre of France, is a savvier in-game manager. So that's going to be a battle to watch as well.
All right, Joshua. There are people that say the U.S. is favored. Others say France is favored. What do you think? What's it going to come down to?
It's going to be very, very tight. But I have to say that with the extra day's rest, with the momentum of France after really toughing out a hard win against Brazil, and I think the home turf makes a difference. You know, the France have never won this, and they know this is a golden generation for them. I think they might edge it.
This morning's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal reporter Joshua Robinson. Kickoff today at 3 p.m. 12 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenko is back with more of America's First News.
Former Vice President Joe Biden faced challenges from presidential hopefuls who took aim at his decades-long record and question whether the party's Obama-era policies have gone far enough. Last night, the second of two Democratic debates highlighted the role of government in health care and other issues, and whether the party should embrace aspects of socialism, a position pushed by Senator Bernie Sanders. Candidates also took shots at President Trump, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
We have no idea which of our most important allies he will have pissed off worse between now and then. What we know is that our relationship with the entire world needs to change.
Other topics covered included education, student debt, policing, and the minimum wage. The Democratic-controlled House has voted to send President Trump a bipartisan Senate-drafted $4.6 billion measure to care for migrant refugees detained at the southern border, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
It should not have been this hard to do this, and I'm proud of the Senate for stepping up, passing a bill 84-8, about as bipartisan as it gets around here, to deal with the humanitarian crisis at the border.
The legislation will provide relief to immigration agencies stretched thin by the recent surge of people seeking asylum at the southern border, paying for food, shelter, and medical care for the migrants. President Trump indicated he would sign it. The battle for political advantage in state capitals is poised to become more intense after the Supreme Court decision declaring that federal judges have no role in settling disputes over partisan gerrymandering. The ruling could empower Republicans and Democrats who hold full control of state legislatures and governorships to become even more aggressive in drawing districts to their benefit after the 2020 census. It could shift legal challenges against partisan gerrymandering to state courts. If you've got big bucks, you can now own a huge piece of the Kennedy family's legacy, a Martha's Vineyard property bought in the late 70s by Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis is up for sale for $65 million. The 300 acres include a secluded home that Jackie O had built so she could relax in private.
So that is just a property.
A property.
A property on Martha's
Vineyard. A waterfront property.
300 acres in Martha's Vineyard. Wow. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Done. Final whistle. What a night. USA fans are celebrating this one. You don't see 13-0 results at a World Cup.
Probably won't see that today either, as the World Cup readies for perhaps the most anticipated match of the World Cup, today's quarterfinal showdown between the U.S. and host France in Paris. The backdrop for the tournament is the activism of many of its participants, and for a global audience that experiences the event mostly through television, the Washington Post says it's impossible to miss. J&J launched a campaign called Because She Can. The Mars Company unveiled a hashtag support her to galvanize fans across the UK, as it says. And in Australia, Hyundai launched a thank you letters campaign in which several members of the Australian national team give thanks to mentors who have aided their careers. The brands are only taking their cues from the teams participating in the tournament. There's the United States' high-profile lawsuit for equal pay, the Spanish team rising up against an abusive coach, and Australia canceling a summer tour to protest low pay. Such actions have elevated this World Cup from an increasingly popular athletic event to something of a cause to rally around. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.